ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 17, entitled Mother Parvati Curses Chitraketu, Text 18. Samsara Chakra Etasmin Chantur Agyana Mohitaha Ramyan Sukham Cha Dukham Cha Bhunkte Sarvatra Sarvada Samsara Chakra Etasmin Chantur Agyana Mohitaha Ramyan Sukham Cha Dukham Cha Bhunkte Sarvatra Sarvada Samsara Chakra Etasmin Chantur Agyana Mohitaha Brahmyan Sukham Cha Dukham Cha Bhunkte Sarvatra Sarvada Samsara Chakre. In the wheel of material existence, Etasmin, this Chantuhu, the living entity, Agyana Mohitaha, being bewildered by ignorance, Brahmyan, wandering, Sukham, happiness, Cha, and Dukkham, distress, Cha, also Bhunkte, he undergoes, Sarvatra, everywhere, Sarvada, always. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Deluded by ignorance, the living entity wanders in the forest of material world, of this material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds, everywhere and at all times. Therefore, my dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident. Purport. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 3.27, Prakrite kriyamana nigunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimudatmam kartaham itti manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by nature. Actually, a conditioned soul is completely under the control of material nature. Wandering here and there, always and everywhere, he is subjected to the results of his past deeds. This is carried out by the laws of nature. But one foolishly thinks himself the doer, which in fact he is not. To get free from the karma chakra, the wheel of results of one's karma, one should take to bhakti marga, devotional service, or Krishna consciousness. That's the only remedy. Sarva dharma parityajam mam ekam sharanam vraja. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yasya Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langmite Girim Yat Kripadamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nittinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Guravani Pracharine Nirvesesa Sunyavade Pasyatyadi Satarine
Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Saṃsar chakra etasmin chantur ākhyāna mohita brahmanya sukham cha dukham cha bhunkti sarvata sarvada. Deluded by ignorance, the living entity wanders in the forest of the material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds, everywhere and at all times. Therefore, my dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident. Hare Krishna. So first of all, thank you very much for this opportunity. I feel very blessed here at the Holy Dham during Kartik, given this opportunity to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. At the same time, also request the blessings of all the senior devotees that I may say something relevant today. So I will read the text from yesterday because they are kind of connected. Here Chitra Ketu is speaking, and yesterday we heard text 17. My dear mother, with my own hands folded together, I accept the curse upon me. I do not mind the curse, for happiness and distress are given by the demigods as a result of one's past deeds. So, and then Chitra Ketu speaks the text from today. So actually, it's quite amazing how Chitra Ketu takes this curse, the way how he reacts, that he immediately just accepted. Okay, you curse me, well, fine. No, it's quite amazing. So I would like to speak a little bit on this quality of Chitra Ketu. But before doing that, maybe we can try to explore a little bit Srila Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada here comments and referring to Bhagavad Gita 3.27, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimudatma kartaham iti manyate. And Krishna, of course, is well known first. Krishna informs us that actually we are not the doer. And that's kind of an important principle to understand. It's also not so easy to understand, because generally when we do something, then we believe that we are actually doing. You know? But that's an illusion, because actually we are not the doer. But if we are not the doer, then who actually is doing? And Krishna explains, prakriti kriyamanani, that the material nature actually is doing. But here comes a question, then who is responsible then? If I'm not a doer, and it's actually just the gunas acting, then who is responsible? And that can be misunderstood or can be also misused. I remember I lived for 1 year in India when I just started my Krishna consciousness, and there we had a bhakta. And this bhakta, he did all kind of nonsense. Every day he did some nonsense, like climbing up the walls and stealing some mahaprasadam and doing all kind of naughty things. And whenever the temple president tried to kind of correct him, he says, Prabhu, I'm not a doer. Prakrite kriyamana ni gunai karmana. I'm not a doer, you know. This is just a material nature acting. And actually, this is Gopal's desire. You know? I'm just acting as an instrument. So, in this way, that could be misused. You know? So how to understand this properly? And I very much like Burichand Prabhu in his Surrender Unto Me gives a very nice explanation. He says there. Thank you. Krishna, so here it says, Krishna, the material nature, and the living entities are all doers. So we are actually doers also. The living entity desires to act. Krishna, as the supersoul, sanction it. And the material nature facilitates the activities. That's how it works. Yet the weight of responsibility for the action rests solely upon the living entity. Although the living entity has no independent power to act, He initiates the action by his desire, while both the supersoul and the material nature, being neutral, facilitate their fulfillments. So that's how it actually works. So we have a desire, and then Krishna gives the sanction, and then material nature makes the arrangements. And I think Prabhupada mentioned, or there is a story how Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and they came across, they saw a little boy try to throw a letter into a letter box, but the boy was too small, he could not reach. No. So he had the desire to put the letter in, but he was too small, and then his father came, lifted him up, and then the boy could throw the letter in. And Prabhupada noticed this scene, and as we know, Prabhupada always has this transcendental vision, and he immediately told to his disciples, this is how it works. The living entity has a desire, Krishna sanction it, and then the material nature makes the arrangement that it happen. So this is kind of an important point to understand. So in this way, we are the doer, but we are not independent doer. We are actually, basically what the soul is doing, we are just desiring. And then according to our desire, the material nature acts by the sanction of the Lord. But a conditioned soul under the influence of the false ego, on the ahamkara, thinks that I am the doer. And thinking I am the doer means also that I am the controller. And I'm the controller, I'm the possessor, and at the end I'm also the enjoyer. But that's of course a completely wrong misunderstanding. And Prabhupada points out here in the purport, he says, actually, a conditioned soul is completely under the control of material nature. Wandering here and there, always, everywhere, he's subjected to the result of his past deeds. So sometimes people, they think, I am free, I can do whatever I want, freedom. But actually, as a conditioned soul, we are completely under the control of material nature. And it is described just like a leaf in the wind is blowing here and there in different direction. So the living entity, we are just blown here and there according to our past deeds. And sometimes we may enjoy some results from our pious activities, and sometimes we suffer as a result from our sinful activities. And that's also compared to like that if there is unexpected guests coming. Well, sometimes we are at home and all of a sudden it knocks and we don't know. We don't have an appointment and we are wondering who is there, who is coming. And sometimes it's a very pleasant surprise, oh, my dear friend is coming. But sometimes, oh no, this guy is coming. Or sometimes even thieves wants to come or so. So similarly, any moment something may happen. Any moment from our past activities, some result may come and we have to either enjoy it or suffer it. So that's how we are under the control of material nature. And these points, and also the amount of happiness and distress is actually already given by the time of birth. It's already set how much we are suffering, how much we will be able to enjoy our life. That's already given from our previous activities. So all these is very well understood by Chitraketu, and that's why Chitraketu says, deluded by ignorance, the living entity wanders in the forest of this material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds everywhere and at all times. And because of this understanding, he's not blaming Mother Parvati, because he just understands Parvati just acts as an instrument for I did something in the past, so now I get the reaction, and Mother Parvati, just an instrument. So he doesn't take it personal in that sense. But still, if you consider this situation, it's kind of quite amazing how Chitraketu reacts, no? Because, I don't know in your life, but if I reflect in my own life, if someone starts to criticize me, if someone blames me or, what to speak of, curse me, usually I try to defend myself, no? That's usually what we do. No, immediately we want to defend. And here also, Chitraketu, he didn't have any bad intention. It was not that he purposely wanted to kind of criticize Shiva. He just observed the situation, and he found it kind of funny. You know, here there is Shiva, he's the Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic yoga, and he's very renounced, and here he sits with his wife on his lap. It's kind of a funny situation. So he just mentioned this, but it was not in a bad mood. And also Lord Shiva and all the other assembled saints and Vaishnavas, they didn't took it so serious. Nobody actually felt it was some apparat. But Parvati, she was very disturbed. So in some way, Chitraketu was cursed, and he could say, hey, that's not fair. This is misunderstanding. Please listen. You know, he could try to defend himself, but he just accept the curse. And that's really amazing. And it's also glorified by Lord Shiva in this chapter. How this behavior of just accepting and not defending himself is actually a wonderful Vaishnava quality. It is said later in this chapter in text 37, it is said here, the great devotee Chitraketu was so powerful that he was quite competent to curse Mother Parvati in retaliation. But instead of doing so, he very humbly accepted the curse and bowed his head before Lord Shiva and his wife. This is very much to be appreciated as a standard behavior of a Vaishnava. So to not defend oneself is kind of that's Vaishnava Sadachar. That's how a devotee actually takes such a situation. And Prabhupada also points out that King Chitraketu was so exalted in his character that in spite of being wrongly cursed by Parvati, he immediately descended from his airplane and bowed his head before the mother, accepting her curse. And Prabhupada says later on, a devotee should always be very humble and meek and should offer all respect to others. No. So however, when a less intelligent person has some power, he wants to use the power. No. But here Chitraketu, although he would be powerful enough to counteract the curse, he just humbly accepted it. And Shiva himself, later on in text 27, he glorifies, and actually the whole chapter basically is glorifying the way how Chitraketu responds to this situation. And Shiva says, this is in text 27, a couple of days this shloka will come here. Lord Shiva said, my dear beautiful Parvati, have you seen the greatness of the Vaishnava? He points out, have you understood what is going on here? No, you cursed, but have you understood the greatness of Chitraketu? Being servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, they are great souls and are not interested in any kind of material happiness. And then Prabhupada very beautifully further explains the mood of Lord Shiva, what actually Shiva wants to tell Mother Parvati. Shiva says to Parvati, my dear Parvati, you are very beautiful in your bodily feature. So Shiva is glorifying. And we can imagine how beautiful must be Parvati be. She must be unlimited, amazing beautiful. So Lord Shiva acknowledged this. Okay, you're very beautiful. Certainly, you are glorious. But I think that you can compete with the beauty and glory of devotees who have become servants of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Your beauty, but the beauty of a Vaishnava is actually much greater. Just see, although you cursed the king, he was not at all afraid or sorry. Rather, he offered respect to you, called you mother, and accepted your curse, thinking himself faulty. He did not say anything in retaliation. This is the excellence of a devotee. By mildly tolerating your curse, he has certainly exhaled the glory of your beauty and your power to curse him. So Shiva says, no, by the power of the tolerance, actually he is more glorious than you. Shiva says to his wife Parvati. And Prabhupada says, indirectly, Lord Shiva forbade Parvati to commit the mistake of cursing a devotee like Chitraketu. He indicates that although Shiva's powerful, and also we understand Parvati, she's also Durga, and she makes sure that nobody leaves the prison house of material world. So Parvati is extremely powerful. She is amazing powerful. But Prabhupada says here that he indicated that although she was powerful, the king, without showing any power, that had exceeded her power by his tolerance. So without showing power, he actually was more powerful. Because tolerance, although tolerance may seem as a passive activity, and also in the material world we see if someone is tolerant, then sometimes people may think that this is a weakness. But actually, it is a great power. It's a great strength if one is able to be tolerant. And we can try to look a little closer at this quality, because it's not so easy to be tolerant. In order to be tolerant, tolerance is actually an inner strength, something we a Vaishnava develops by his deep relationship to Krishna. Just like a tree who has very deep roots, even if there is a heavy storm or hurricane, the tree will not be fall down or uprooted because it has strong roots. So similarly, if a devotee is very deeply situated in his Krishna consciousness, then he will be able to be tolerant. And this tolerance, of course, is an extremely important quality. And the other day, Mother Devaki, Madhuchi, gave a seminar on the false ego, and quite some of the thoughts in this lecture actually coming from the seminar. That's the process. Shravanam, Kirtanam, we listen and then we try to repeat. So Mother Devaki mentioned there that actually it's not so easy to be tolerant, because tolerance is very much linked to how much our ego has been reduced. If you have a big ego, how can you be tolerant? Only if your ego has been kind of reduced, if you have become free more and more from your ego, then you can actually show tolerance. So this tolerance, therefore, is a very important quality. And, of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has already very much stressed Trinada Pisa Nichina, Tarora Pisa Ishtuna, Amani Namanadena, Kirtanya Sada Harihi. And in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find beautiful shlokas describing this quality. Utamahana apana kemana trinadamaha doi prakare saishnutaha kare vrikshasama. Vrikshayena kati leha kichuna polayaha sukana malehi karehe panina makaya. Heye makaye tare deya apane dana karma vristi saheya nera Anir Karya Rakshana. That's from Antya Lila, chapter 20, text 22 till 24. These are the symptoms of one who chants the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Although he is very exalted, he thinks himself lower than the grass on the ground, and like a tree, he tolerates everything in two ways. So now some description comes how actually a tree tolerates. And it's kind of important. We all know Trinada Pisunichana, but why actually Mahaprabhu uses the example of a tree, and that's described here. When a tree is cut down, it does not protest. And not even not protesting, but when you cut a tree, then it makes a sound, yes? Like, and with this sound, the tree says, hey, go away, otherwise I will hurt you, no? So the tree warns even the person who cuts him down. No? That's That's how the tree is not protesting and even is worried that the person who cuts him gets hurt. And even when drying up, sometimes there is drought, it does not ask anyone for water. No? Have you ever seen a tree asking, can you give me a glass of water? No, a tree is always just standing there, not moving, not saying, just tolerating. Even if there for months there is no rain, the tree just tolerates. The tree delivers its fruits, flowers, and water, whatever else it possesses, to anyone and everyone. So whoever comes to the tree gives fruits, the tree gives shadow, gives some shelter. It tolerates scorching heat and torrents of rain, yet it still gives shelter to others. So that's the beautiful characteristic of a tree and of a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava, although maybe facing so many difficulties, a Vaishnava always is ready to give and give shelter to others, helping others, but himself, he's just tolerating. Although a Vaishnava is the most exalted person, he's prideless and gives all respect to everyone, knowing everyone to be the resting place of Krishna. If one chants the holy name of Lord Krishna in this manner, he will certainly awaken his dormant love for Krishna's lotus feet. So in this way, Mahaprabhu describes the power of tolerance and how a tree is a very good example of that. So a devotee is able to tolerate because he is deeply rooted like a tree and has a deep connection to Krishna. That's also many, the many shlokas describing this quality here in Bhagavatam Canto 3, chapter 25, verse 23. It also says, engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sadhus do not suffer from material misery because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. So sadhus, although, of course, there is also distress for everyone, also for a sadhu, for a Vaishnava, we may also experience difficult things, but because a Vaishnava is very much absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's activities, in the holy name, he's able to tolerate it. And a beautiful shloka also expressed this in the 10th canto, chapter 20, text 15, where it's compared to a mountain. Just as a devotee whose minds are absorbed in the personality of Godhead remain peaceful, even when attacked by all sorts of danger, the mountains in the rainy season were not at all disturbed by the repeated striking of rain-bearing clouds. And then in a purport, that's actually from Vishnava Chakravarti Thakur, who says that when splashed by torrents of rain, the mountains are not shaken. No, a mountain is not shaking. Actually, Sachinandan Maharaj, sometimes in his retreats, he makes the mountain meditation. No? You can try to imagine yourself being a mountain, look, being very fixed, not shaking. It's a nice meditation. We'll not do it here, but it's a nice meditation. Try to imbibe this mood of being a mountain, like being very fixed, not shaking, even under these difficult circumstances. And then similarly, an advanced devotee of the Supreme Lord is not shaken from his devotional program by disturbing conditions, which instead cleanses his heart of the dust of attachment to this world. Thus, a devotee becomes beautiful and resplendent by tolerating difficult conditions. In fact, a devotee accepts all reverses in life as the mercy of Lord Krishna. So just as a mountain, actually a mountain becomes more beautiful if it rains, because all the mud, all the dirt is washed away by the rain, and then after that the mountain, you know, shines very clear. So similarly, a Vaishnava, if the Vaishnava goes through difficulties and gets purified, afterwards he becomes more beautiful and more devoted to Lord Krishna. So with these verses we can see how tolerance is a very, very important quality. So about how to develop this tolerance, I already mentioned that it means we are spiritually deep, we have to develop our relationship to Krishna, to our Guru, But in order to be tolerant, we need also other qualities, and they are very much linked to each other. Like Trinadopi Sunichna, there we hear we have to be humble, we have to be showing respect and not expecting respect from others. So humility and faith, we learned also. Humility and faith are two other qualities which are very important in order to be tolerant. And so why humility? Because if I think myself to be something very special, then actually I expect that people show respect to me, right? And if I expect respect, then I will be very easily disturbed if someone doesn't give me that respect. Don't you know who I am? No, I am this and that. And then we have all our title. No, you should give me Mahaprasad, or you should give me a seat or some special arrangement, or what, I have to pay for this guest room? Don't you know I'm a this and that? So if we think ourselves something special, then it will be difficult to tolerate if someone doesn't treat us in the proper way. So that's why, as a Vaishnava, of course, we always try to maintain this mood of, I'm just a humble servant. And like Srila Prabhupada mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he mentioned that as long we possess a material body, we should consider ourselves to be neophyte devotees. No? Because the fact that we have a material body shows that we did something wrong. You know, we are, that it means we are conditioned souls. No? As I think Mahadyuti Prabhu said it like this, if you come to the material world, you have a sign around your... Now I have a beautiful garland, but as a conditioned souls, usually we have a sign around the neck. What is written there? Fool number one. That's the sign which we wear. Because the fact that we have come to the material world means we are fool number one. We did something wrong, right? So understanding this, one should always maintain a humble attitude. You know, I'm a conditioned soul. You know, what can I do? Only by the mercy of Guru and Gauranga I may be able to do some good, have some good qualities. But actually on my own, I'm completely useless. I'm depending on the mercy of Krishna. And that's why, but it's not so easy to maintain. As a new bhakta, it's kind of easy because everyone tells us, you know, you're a bhakta, you're a greenhorn, you don't know. So, but after some years of practicing Krishna consciousness, especially if you also get some position and some power, then we start to think, oh, now I made it. Now I'm really a... I become a good Vaishnava or something like that. The thing, I'm not sure whether it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta who said that the day I think, I have become a Vaishnava, that day is a very dangerous day. Very dangerous. Because, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a song in which he describes this very nicely. This is from Kalyana Kalpataru, song 13. He says here, O great Vaishnavas, please be merciful unto me. Please let my pride be dismantled as I worship the Lord by understanding my eternal relationship with Him. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if I develop the mentality I am a Vaishnava, then I will not become a mani, or not expecting respect for myself. So if I think I'm a Vaishnava, then I will not be able to give or show respect, rather I demand respect from everyone else, because I think myself to be such a great personality. And thus, as a result, the desire for fame will capture and pollute my heart. My heart gets polluted by this desire, yes, please worship me, and then, as a result, I will go to hell. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. quite a strong statement. So thinking, I am a Vaishnava, and as a result, at the end, I go to hell. So quite a strong statement. So that's why Indra Dyumna Maharaj the other day mentioned that actually as a devotee, we consider ourselves aspiring devotees. No? We consider ourselves to, I try to become a Vaishnava. That's the mood. No? And we depend on the mercy of those who are actually... Because a Vaishnava is a very exalted personality. And then here Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays to the Vaishnavas, I will give up the pride of being a spiritual master and consider myself to be your servant. I will always accept without duplicity the remnants of your food, the water that has washed your lotus feet, and the dust from your lotus feet. I will not desire respect from myself, but instead give respect to all others. You will give me the authority to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. Therefore, I take shelter of your lotus feet without duplicity, rolling on the ground while crying. So that's the mood Bhaktivinoda Thakur is showing. How one should cultivate this quality of humility. So then it will be more easy to tolerate different situations because we have accepted this humble attitude. And even if we are not always able to maintain this mentality, Krishna is very kind, and Krishna is very expert in crushing the pride of his devotees. Have you noticed this? In the Bhagavatam we find many stories, like Krishna crushes the pride of Lord Indra, for example, Govardhan Lila. But I think also in our own experiences, I don't know, but I remember, in my case, I remember a story in our temple in Zurich, in Switzerland, at a Sunday program. There one Maharaj gave an initiation ceremony at a Sunday program, and Maharaj did a yagya, and I was assisting as an puchari, like as the assistant for the yagya, and somehow I felt quite comfortable in this situation to be the priest and assistant of Maharaj. And the temple room was full, so many devotees were there, everyone looking at us, and I preparing, singing, and yes, Maharaj. So I felt kind of comfortable in this situation. And then Maharaj started to do the yagya, and then he did this Mangalacharan, Om Agyana, Dimirandya, and so on. And then all of a sudden, Maharaj lost his voice. He could not continue, so he said, you continue. Okay. Not such a big task because he already almost completed the mantras. It was just Shri Krishna Chaitanya and Hare Krishna Mahamantra left. No problem. So I chanted Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And somehow or other, by Krishna's mercy, I mixed up the mantras. And all of a sudden I pronounced or said the Hare Krishna Mahamantra wrong. You know? And everyone noticed and everyone started to laugh. You know. And I felt like, oh my God, you know. It was so devastating. So that at the moment, while everyone was laughing, I realized, oh, I was a little proud. You know, I felt very nice being the priest here. You know, but then Krishna teach me a lesson. You know, always remain in a humble position. You know, I guess all of you could tell a similar story. You know, and. Maybe to conclude, there is some story in regard of with Arjuna, because after the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna also had developed some little pride because, first of all, they were victorious, and he was the great hero of the battle, and also he had directly heard the message of Bhagavad Gita, so Krishna could understand that Arjuna had developed some little pride there. So he made an arrangement. So when they were driving on the chariot back home to Hastinapur, then they came across and they saw a situation. There was a jackal, you say in English, a jackal. And the jackal was moving around a dead body, like very nervous, moving around the dead body. And Arjuna looked, and Krishna said, stop the jackal. Like he stopped. And then Arjuna made a comment, such a foolish animal. Why he's not eating the dead body? No? The dead body, that's the food meant for him, but he's just smelling and just is a foolish jackal. And Krishna called the jackal, please come here. And the jackal came, folded hand. Yes, my Sri Krishna, and how can I serve you? And then Krishna asked, why don't you eat? This is food meant for you. Why only smell? And then the jackal said, my dear Krishna, you're the supreme personality of Godhead. You're residing in the hearts of all the living entities. You know everything. But because you're asking me, I will explain you. You know, Arjuna already started to scratch his head. This is a very special jackal, you know, very, very well cultured and behaved. And then the jackal said, you know, I'm an animal. I don't have any ways to make progress, spiritual progress. The only thing I can do is I can be careful what I eat. So I only eat prasadam, okay? I only take prasadam. And how do I know whether something is prasad or not? Well, I smell. I smell at the ears of the dead body. And if the ears have never listened Krishna Katha, I will not touch that ear. Then I smell the hands. If the hands have never done any service for the Supreme Lord, I will not eat these hands. If the feet never walked to a pilgrim place, I will not touch the feet. Well, that's why I'm smelling and checking out whether this body actually is prasad or not. And then Arjuna was completely bewildered. And he could understand, my God, that's a very elevated Vaishnava. You know? So in this way, Arjuna's pride was crushed. You know? So we can see Krishna, because it's not so easy to always maintain this mood of humility. So Krishna helps us. You know, Krishna is very kind. Krishna makes arrangements that our pride is crushed. And in this way, we can be humble. And then also, in order to be tolerant, we need faith, as is explained here or shown by Chitraketu, faith in a way that we always see the hands of Krishna. We don't understand whatever happens. Actually, this is an arrangement by the Lord. This is the Lord's mercy. So, in summary, we can say, I will read again the text. Deluded by ignorance, the living entity wanders in the forest of this material world, enjoying the happiness and distress resulting from his past deeds everywhere and at all times. Therefore, my dear mother, neither you nor I am to be blamed for this incident. So Chitraketu had this clear understanding, and this whole chapter is basically glorifying the characteristic of Chitraketu, that he didn't defend himself, he just accepted. And this actually is a beautiful behavior of a Vaishnava. And that just not defending was only possible because he was so tolerant. And this tolerance is only possible if we develop our deep relationship to Krishna, if we become very humble and have faith that whatever happened is Krishna's mercy. So we are very fortunate to be here in Vrindavan during this time of Kartik. So we can pray to the Lord that we may also develop these qualities. And I also ask you that, because I spoke all these things, but I'm basically preaching to myself, so please bless me, bless us, that we can also develop these Vaishnava qualities. And then when we face such difficult situation, that we also be able to tolerate and behave in a proper way. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. So I'd like to see whether some of the senior Vaishnavas, they like to comment something, like to add something, or if someone has some questions. Do we have a microphone somewhere? Does it mean that karma is hindering this conditioned souls who have the right desire? Interesting question. It is said that according to the way we are conditioned, because the question is that we spoke about the different aspect of doer, that actually we are the doer, the material nature is the doer, and the Supreme Lord, these are the three doers. But actually, we desire the Lord's sanction and then the material nature facilitates the activities. And then Prabhupada's question is that, is it that our karma, which has piled up, actually hinders the conditioned soul to make the right choices or to, right? Yeah. And it's an interesting question, and according to my understanding, we are covered, we are conditioned by material nature, by the three gunas. And there are different combination of gunas, and the more we are conditioned by ignorance and passion, the more we are bound up, and the more we are very conditioned, and our free will or the ability to actually make a clear decision is very limited. It's very limited, actually. And actually, if you boil it down, the conditioned soul can only desire two things: either turning our face towards Krishna or turning our face away from Krishna. That's actually the only thing. And at the degree we surrender to Krishna, that creates the combination of gunas. But it is said that the more we develop sattva gun, the more we become free, and the more we can actually have proper understanding, and we can make proper decision. So that's why Prabhupada also stressed so much that we first of all have to come to the mode of goodness. And the whole morning program, for example, rising early in the morning, attending Mangal Arati, that all, taking bath, being clean, that all helps us to come on the platform of goodness, and then we will be able to actually make proper decision and surrender more and more to Krishna. Yeah? Okay, thank you. Something else? Okay, then thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Hare Krishna. Vansha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.